Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is John Park. John is a professional maker. He builds creative technology projects, tutorials, and videos for Adafruit Industries. John hosted the Emmy-nominated Make television show on American Public Television. Prior to joining Adafruit, John worked in computer graphics, including 12 years in animation at Disney. John is an amateur circus aerialist and a synthesizer enthusiast. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, Mark? How you doing, Kevin? Hi.
How are you doing?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great. So this is, I'm not sure if the first time you were on, I don't think you had joined Adafruit yet.
That's right. Yeah. I was working at Disney Research at that time. And I've known Phil and Lamore from Adafruit for probably 15 years or so, because we were all involved with various Make magazine things and maker fairs from the beginning of that. But I started about 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago working full time for Adafruit.
And I should just put in a plug for your videos, because that's kind of a lot of what you do with Adafruit, is that you make really cool projects, and then you do process videos, tutorials, how you build them. And then you also have a live video that I think, do you do your live video every week?
Yeah, that's right. I do a live stream on Thursdays at 4 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock our time over here in the Pacific time zone. And it's called John Park's Workshop. It's live here in my workshop. And I usually do a couple of smaller projects and tips and tutorials. And then I'll have a larger build of a project that I'm doing for that week, which I then create a full learn guide tutorial for the website for Adafruit.
And where do you stream that?
So we stream on the Adafruit YouTube channel, as well as Twitch, Facebook Live, and Periscope.
All at the same time.
All at the same time. So this is actually, here's a tool tip. Restream.io is the website we use. I don't know how it was set up, if it costs anything. I just have some access to go fill in the title of my show that week and a couple other little details. And what it does is I send my stream out of my workshop to that site, and it then spews it out to all of those services for us. So I only have to worry about the bandwidth of getting from here to Restream.io.
And are these, is it free to receive the stream, or is this only available to premium or patron?
Yeah, it's free, all free. So anyone can tune in on any of those platforms. There's nothing to sign up for. Just go to YouTube. That's probably the biggest one. The other thing we do is we found that since we were streaming to a bunch of places simultaneously, it was getting kind of nutty to keep track of the chat in all of those platforms. So what we've done is moved almost all of our chat to Discord. So we have an Adafruit Discord server, and there's a live stream or live broadcast channel in there, and that's where people kind of hang out. So when I'm doing the show, if I have a question or if someone has a comment or a question, that's where we handle all the chat there, just in text chat on Discord.
Well, that's a great suggestion. Going back to the tool side of it, are you streaming like from a single camera, or do you have someone mixing different camera angles live?
I do, except that person is me. So I'm kind of trying to keep track of it all as I go. So I'm using a piece of software called Wirecast to broadcast. And it has layers on it where I've preset cameras. And then I actually built a little button box that's a little microcontroller running CircuitPython that acts like a USB macro keyboard type of thing. I built it into a cigar box with 6 arcade buttons on it. So when I'm over at my workbench, I can hit a button and it'll make my main camera switch between one of 3 cameras. And then I have a picture-in-picture that can switch between one of 3 cameras.
John has a cool setup.
That is so sweet. Do you have a little monitor that's showing you what you are actually seeing?
Yeah. So I'm kind of keeping an eye on, I have maybe a 30-something inch cheap LCD TV that's right behind my main camera, so that I'm looking at that, which helps me not be looking away. So I'm basically looking into the camera for that main cam. But out of the corner of my eye, I'm seeing the broadcast software so I can pay attention to the picture-in-picture stuff, or if I'm putting my head in the view of my overhead camera.
I mean, I would say maybe 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, you're talking about like $500,000 TV studio.
Right. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Absolutely crazy. The fact that people can do all of that for so cheap. In fact, you can use a free open source software that's very similar. OBD, I think, Open Broadcast something or other. ODB or OBD, something like that. There's one that a lot of people use that's very similar to the one I'm using.
Do you ever use any teleprompting?
I do not. So when I do the live stream, it's straight live. When I do a quarterly unboxing, we have an Adafruit AdaBox, which is a subscription service. When I do those videos or any of my videos where I'm building something and pre-editing and then packaging that and putting it out, I really hate using teleprompters. So what I tend to do is write bullet points for myself and then improvise as I go and refine that. And after a couple takes, I'll try to never go more than like four takes on something, just because it's so much data to deal with later. And I avoid that sort of teleprompting issue. I know some people will use little beam splitters and iPads and things for teleprompting, but I avoid like the plague having to actually read off of a word for word script.
Right. This, what you've described is just very inspiring because, most of the world of YouTube is sort of, it's offset, it's time shifted. You have time to process, but live streaming, that's a whole nother animal. That is another league entirely.
It's exciting. I like it.
Yes, exactly. And there's a jolt. There's an energy to it that, is a different thing. And I hadn't really heard anybody doing a kind of a one-man show like you're doing. That is amazing.
It's a juggling act. And I'm not a good multitasker by nature. So all senses are kind of on edge at all times to kind of keep the thing from falling.
Have you done a video? Have you done a tour of the tools? Have you done kind of a tutorial on how you do this?
That's a really neat idea. I'd love to do that sometime.
You should, because I think it'd be really valuable. Just kind of telling exactly what you told us, how you do it. Here's what it is. Here's the link to get it. And I think that would be really powerful.
Another reason for you to come to LA, Kevin, so then I'll take you to John's place and you can see the setup that he's designed. It's really cool.
Well, the whole point of YouTube is I don't have to travel to LA. I can just watch it from my couch.
That's right. when I was getting set up to do this, I asked Phil Terone at Adafruit because he had been doing this already for a number of years. And I said, all right, I don't feel like researching things endlessly. Can you give me a head start on what are you actually running? And so, for example, the HDMI to USB boxes that he's using, I have three of those so that all my cameras are outputting HDMI, which is usually a lot nicer stream out of a camera than USB. And then these little Magewell boxes convert that into a USB 3. So he gave me this list of, here's 10 things that work well and they work well together. And that saved me so much heartache, it was years.
Well, I think I think it's time for you to share it to the world.
Yeah. I have written it up before, so it would be fun to maybe shoot a little video or publish that.
And so maybe send us a link of where you have written it up because that also might be useful.
Absolutely.
Great.
Sounds good. So John, let's talk about some of the tools that you have been using lately. And we'll start with your push drill.
Right. So this is something a lot of people will have already or recognize from their grandparents' toolboxes. And they're often called a Yankee drill or a Yankee push drill. And it is a very small, like screwdriver-sized hand drill. You can use it as a screwdriver, but I use it with the little reamer bits that often come with them. Anytime I need to do small drilling or drilling in tight spaces, because it is so much better than the sort of spiral of a drill bit as far as not breaking thin materials and sort of screwing them and going in sideways. It has a little fine sort of chisel type of tip, and then it's just two flutes that are parallel to the axis of the tool, and they do a great job. You can step your way up through them. They're usually in the handle. There's usually like 6 or 8 bits that come with it. And I get them at yard sales and things like that, although I included a link for a really nice looking one from Garrett Wade. But you can usually haunt eBay and yard sales to find one of these.
And the idea is for our listeners is that it's like a screwdriver, and when you push on it, and you're actually pushing in the direction that you want the hole, mm-hmm. when you push on it, it slides down, and that slider spins the drill, mm-hmm. and then when you pull it back, it keeps spinning in the same direction, so you can kind of pump it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll have a drill that has no batteries, that's always yep. ready, and more importantly, by adjusting the speed at which you're pushing, you can actually adjust the speed of the drill. So it's you have yeah. very fine control.
Great description of it. You sound really familiar with them. And you know, I like that you're pushing in the direction of what you're doing, because I have one of those little tiny crank hand drills, and it's hard to kind of keep those straight. But this one, you really, I think that's the key thing, is the fact that you're just kind of pushing in the direction of the hole makes it a really smooth operation.
And it's good for putting holes through printed circuit boards or increasing the diameter of them?
Yeah, yeah, you can use it on that. I used it recently on a model kit. A friend of mine was adding lights and sound to a little Millennium Falcon model he had been building, and I was helping him wire it, and this was a great tool for that. And I've used it on, you know, thin metal enclosures, aluminum cases, and things like that too.
And yeah, you can buy them new, and mm-hmm. they are not cheap. The ones I've seen used on yard sales and state sales will vary in sizes. Some mm-hmm. of them are larger and some will be smaller. Mm-hmm. And I think for our purposes, what you want is a smaller one.
Yeah, if you want to use it for this and then go either sharpen or get some new bits if you've gotten a used one, because they might not right. be in the greatest shape. But yeah, it's funny. I think the first time I ever saw one of these is in the Blues Brothers. There's a moment when the Blues Brothers are in an elevator, and Elwood, I think it is, pulls an enormous one out of his jacket pocket and opens the elevator panel so that he can stop the elevator. But I was like, what the heck is this thing? I mean, it was the biggest one I've ever seen. I don't know if it was a prop, but I swear the thing was like 2.5 feet long.
That is awesome.
And of course, it came from a time, these are several hundred years old. They came yeah. from a time when all drills were hand drills, and then yeah. this was, the efficiency of this was so great that yeah. this was the power drill of the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's terrific design. Love it.
Very cool. So moving on down, tell us about the Adafruit trellis.
Oh, yeah. So this actually, I mentioned the Ada box. The most recent Ada box we did, this is what came in it. So it's a subscription box where people get a few parts that go together and work for a bunch of tutorials that we've created, and sort of launching off point for other things they want to do. This one is really interesting because it's a ATSAMD51 Cortex M4 chip as the processor, which is pretty fast, has quite a bit of storage and memory on it. And what we did, instead of a sort of general purpose microcontroller like the Feather or a Teensy or an Arduino, this one kind of has a purpose implied, because the circuit board that it's built onto has 32 light up buttons built onto it. And then we have a little rubber, like elastomer button pad that goes on it, and a little laser cut enclosure. And it has a headphone out on it, as well as a sort of general purpose serial output and USB for data and power. So you put it together and you're kind of holding what, you know, MIDI and synthesizer people would know as something like a monome or a launch pad, but you can program it in CircuitPython or Arduino to do anything you want. So you can make it just be a little light up toy where you just change the color of the buttons by clicking on them. They've got RGB NeoPixels under them. Or you can make it into a sequencer or a MIDI control device. I made a application launcher for my computer with one. So I just hit a red button and it launches Gmail. I hit a blue button and it switches over to Twitter on a web page, that sort of thing. And so we did probably a dozen or more projects with this thing to go with along with the Ada box. And I think it's just terrific. Like the ability to iterate with CircuitPython on it or do more hardcore, heavier duty applications in Arduino is gives you a couple of choices with it. But it's also immediately gratifying. It's got an accelerometer built onto it. And so you can pretty quickly go from someone who knows how to code a little bit and wants to learn about hardware, or the other direction with just kind of one thing that you plug into your computer and get a lot out of it.
So it's you know, but the size of maybe a fat phone, mm-hmm. and it's just covered with buttons that have lights in them, and mm-hmm. you can use it in theory to control any kind of complicated set of things that you want.
Yeah.
Rather than just have a single button, if you have something where you want to have a button for each thing that you want to do, this is what you would use it for.
For sure. Yeah.
John, can you talk a little bit about CircuitPython and what it is and kind of why it's an improvement over the existing?
Yeah, so CircuitPython comes from, there's a MicroPython that was developed starting a couple of years ago. And at one point, Adafruit was getting interested in it and forked it so that we could develop libraries for, you know, we've done like 100 and something libraries just to support all the different sensors and hardware and things that you can plug in. So CircuitPython runs on any of the M0 or M4 based chips, and I think there are others that it's being ported to. It's a programming language that is going to be super familiar to people who know Python, and it is a runtime application essentially that runs on the device. So there is no tool chain for compiling like you might be familiar with from Arduino. Rather, you just save this .py file, this text file, onto the board, and the CircuitPython hardware shows up as a USB drive when you plug it in. So you just see this drive pop up called CircuitPy. You go, I'm going to go ahead and open up the Python file that's sitting on there, edit it, hit save, and it immediately runs. So one of the huge benefits for me is I'm a real hack as far as coding goes. I'm usually just editing things and cobbling things together from cutting and pasting, and so I'm super iterative. And the ability to essentially have immediate results when you change something and hit save versus a compile and flash upload process makes it really easy for me to figure things out sort of on the loose, on the fly way that I like to do. So that's, I don't know if I've done CircuitPython justice, but it's about 2 years now that it's been available, and it's gotten a lot of great libraries ported over to it, a lot of applications being made with it, and I think it's going to become increasingly popular for people in education as well, because it's sort of quick and easy to deal with compared to installing a full-blown IDE like Arduino. So my third tool recommendation is a copper jigger for measuring drinks when you're mixing things like cocktails. And this one is really cool because it's a reproduction or a remake of a classic design from a company called Napier, who've been out of business, I think, for a long time. But these jiggers were made definitely in the 30s and maybe earlier. They're sort of an Art Deco style. And I had seen one in a video online of a bartender showing how to mix a drink, and I hunted it down. And the cool thing about this, it's pretty distinctive looking, is it's called a stepped jigger. So it's a small, it measures up to 2 ounces, but it's a small cylinder that has stepped gradations. So the width is consistent at the base up until a mark where you've measured just a half an ounce of liquid. And then the next step up is an ounce, and the next is an ounce and a half, and the next step up is 2 ounces. And the reason this is great is because you can see from above it down into it when you reach a level. So you don't have to look sort of at the side of it if it were glass with markings on it. You don't have to bend over to eye level with it. You can look at it straight down, and they're just cool looking. So this company called Standard Spoon, they decided to reproduce it. So they sort of painstakingly modeled it in 3D and made some alterations to the design a little bit, including a couple that I really like. They removed the handle. It had a handle on it. You can still get one from them that has it, but I kind of like it without. You can stack them this way, and you also just don't knock into that handle, which you don't really need. And they also added extra two engraved lines on the inside that don't appear in the stepping on the outside, that are a 1/4 ounce and a 3/4 ounce, which are also pretty common measurements you come up with if you're making cocktails. They make it in a bunch of materials. The originals were either sterling silver or a silver plated, I don't know what, tin. But the one that I got from them when they did this Kickstarter just like a year ago is a solid copper one, which I just like. It just looks nice and feels nice in your hand.
Yeah, it looks so nice.
Yeah, and they also do a metric version for, I don't use that, but there never was one. So now for people who are doing metric-based stuff, I think they also sell a milliliters one. This one's in ounces.
That is really great.
And are those numbers engraved or stamped in
them?
Looks like they're laser engraved.
They may be, I don't actually know. They have a little deformation around them on the one I have in my hand versus the photo online. So I think the process may have changed from that photo to what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. It looks maybe like it was stamped. But it's nicely done. It's clear. If they did stamp it, it was with a nice, fresh, hard, clean tool, and it didn't deform it that much.
So at $25, it looks like a good gift.
Yeah, I've usually spent, when I'm lucky, 30 on an old one. When I'm not lucky, like 80, as I've hunted them down on eBay over the years. So your mileage will vary with them, and how excited you are about one can set you back a lot of money. But for like a consistent, they make them now, they don't have like suspicious grime on the insides, this $25 is pretty good.
And they won't be making them forever either.
They probably won't. Yeah, get them now.
Yeah. So the next one is something that's near and dear to my heart. That this the Blackwing pencil line.
Oh yeah, so this is a crossword puzzle pencil sampler set from a pencil store. So there's this great store in New York. I haven't been there. I bought them online, but there's a great store in New York called CW Pencils, and they, like the name implies, they curate pencils and related things, stationery and sharpeners and things like that. But they're really all about pencils. And this set was given to me as a gift. I think my wife got it for me a couple years ago for Christmas. And it's a sample pack of six pencils that they feel are particularly great for doing the crossword puzzle. So the hardness is such that they don't smudge, but they're still pretty dark, and yet they can still erase. And then of these, I actually have them kind of separated out into, there's three of them that work pretty well on the Sunday New York Times Magazine, which is this horrible, horrible, thin, glossy paper that most pencils just don't want to show up on. So there's actually three of them in here that are pretty tolerable with that one. And then there's a couple that I like for the regular newspaper. And then there's a couple that work great on those sort of collections, those spiral bound collections they do. So this is pretty darn niche, and you can get away with using any pencil on the planet to do your crossword. But this is kind of a fun luxury to have these really finely curated special purpose pencils for doing your crossword.
Cool.
Looks great.
And they could, you could use them for other things too, I'm sure.
You're allowed to, I suppose, but I wouldn't. I keep them in a special pouch and no one takes them. And then actually a year after I got them, I went back on, I had never been to their site. My wife had got me the pencils, but I went and looked at what else they had. And I ended up with, for pretty cheap, some little metal tips that protect the ends of the pencils, since these are real pencils and not mechanicals. The tips can get broken off, so I got a few of those. And
oh,
I also
really?
Got,
I've never, like a little condom.
Yeah,
for,
it's a great, wow. Yeah, a little armor, and it's got a little split so that it can, you can squish it down to the right diameter for the pencils you're using. Wow. So I have I think I got a three pack of those, so some of mine are
pencil
protected.
Sheath.
They're pretty cool, yeah, and not expensive. So wow. you might look at that as an add-on if you're thinking of getting pencils from these guys. I also got a nice sharpener, a little brass sharpener while I was at it.
So that's great. So tell us a little bit more. You mentioned your streaming program, and you have a YouTube channel as well.
So I've got my own YouTube channel, which is at, gosh, if I can remember, we'll put a link in, but I think it's youtube.com/JohnParkMakes.
Yes.
And so on there, I've collected things like the Make Television Show episodes, the workshop section I did on those, as well as some of my circus shenanigans and other things. And I'll put up sort of little work in progress things sometimes for something I'm building as an Adafruit project as I'm developing it, if I want to share it with someone or get feedback. And then I've also got the show, the regular show on Thursdays for Adafruit, as well as loads of social media where I also publish little snippets of things as
And most of the stuff that you're doing on YouTube channel is with Adafruit or microelectronics of some sort like that?
Yeah, for Adafruit, it's all revolving around these sort of creative technology projects. And then for my own YouTube, I've been really getting deeply interested in synthesizers, music synthesizers and sequencers and modular Eurorack synthesizers over the last year. So I've started to publish some of those little either showing how something works, or if I'm building a kit or doing little jams, little pieces of music. Mm-hmm. I'll also put those up on my YouTube.
Are you a musician?
You know what? It's funny. I don't really consider myself one. I grew up singing a lot in school and in college and studying voice, but I've never been an instrumental musician. And I've always been super intimidated by the notion of songwriting. Actually, I was talking to Mark about this the other day, and I was telling him one of the things that I've really been excited about over the last year is getting some of these very, very simple synthesizers like the Pocket Operators, which just have a very few things they can do, and writing little background music that I'll use at the intro to my video or the intro to my live stream has really freed me from this sort of fear of songwriting as like a big scary thing, and instead just allowing me to make sort of little sketches and fun ambient pads or beat sequences with some music on top of it. So I'm not ready to call myself a musician with like bold letters or anything, but I am definitely
making music. Sounds like
Kevin, you got to get a Pocket Operator. You'll love it.
I do. So tell me about Pocket Operator.
Oh, they're really cool. There's this company in Sweden called Teenage Engineering, which I think is a great name. And they're a design firm who do quite a few different things, including some more fully featured, more expensive synthesizers. But they did this line. They produce this line of calculator sized, and they kind of look like calculators. They have a grid of 16 buttons for sequencing drums and music, and then extra buttons on the side for adding in effects and choosing some patterns to save too. And they have a cute little largely useless LCD screen up above that's mostly like a Nintendo Game & Watch. They just show funny little animations as you're doing stuff, but give you very, very little info. And you know, they're just based on, I think, a STM32 processor. So it's all digital synthesis, but they sound great. And you can plug them into a real system or headphones. They also have a little speaker on there that sounds decent enough. And they can sync a click track with others. So you can plug a few of them together and have one that's geared towards being a bass line and one that's geared towards being drums and one that's for doing chords and leads. So you can string them together, but even just on their own, they're just super fun to like have on an airplane or somewhere in a waiting room, plug in some headphones. And they are, like I was saying before, so limited in your choices that it forces you to be creative and noodle around rather than I think the thing I had been scared about for years or just like grumpy about was the endless choice available in computer-based digital audio workstations like Ableton Live or Reason. Like there's so many plugins and so many endless tracks and you can revise and noodle. And I really like this idea of being forced by a ton of constraints to just make something and be happy enough with it.
And does the Pocket thing, does it record what you have, what you compose?
No, you, what I got actually is there's a, what do they call it? The iRig is a little dongle for your phone or anything, but it's for people who want to like play guitar into their phone or use, I think, modeled amplifiers on their iPads with the guitar, but you can plug anything into it. So it's a little dongle that allows iPhones and other devices to record a nice clean audio coming off of anything. So I have one of those with me when I've kind of traveled with the Pocket Operator so I could record onto it.
That said though, John, you can record like kind of the basic underlying pattern.
Ah, yeah. Right? You can save sequences. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can build a pattern, save it, call it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you can like jam on top of that.
I see. Right. Okay. All right.
That's right. Yeah. It's a sequencer.
Cool. Well, that's fabulous. Yeah. That, you're right, Mark. I think I would like to fool around with that because I'm a little bit like John. I can't play an instrument except for the radio. And but I am attracted to the idea of making musical sounds. And
so fun. It's like that little Nintendo DS.
Cartridge. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? That DS cartridge, I made a little song in it, and I use it behind my Make Code Minute video every week. There's a Microsoft Make Code is another little sort of Blockly-like programming environment that we have running on Circuit Playground Express. And every week I do a little, about 2 minute actually, video. And my intro and outro music is a little thing I wrote on that Nintendo DS Korg application.
That's great. Yeah, that's what we're talking about. And you know, it's just like anybody became a photographer once we had iPhones, and anybody will be a musician now that we have pockets.
Yeah. That's true. Definitely. Yeah. Well, John, this has been fun talking to you. I'm glad we got you on the line again for a second time, and would love to have you back again soon because you're always working on cool stuff.
I always love talking about tools, so thank you so much. And I love the show, so keep it up.